morning. I'm going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Today we have an informational hearing. We have been requested, we're graced with the presence of Representative Karen Yarbrough from Illinois, who's here in the state, and she was in Portland, I believe, yesterday, and her schedule permitted her to come down. And we're set up this informational hearing to hear directly from her as to the experiences that the state of Illinois has experienced as it surrounds the death penalty and the repeal of the death penalty in that state. So, Representative Yarbrough, we'd love for you to please come forward. We do have a couple of guests here that are from the, or at least one right now that's from the House side, and we may have a few others. I do know some of my committee members have other commitments, so as you know, probably as in your world, they may need to leave before we get concluded. But really, the floor is yours. We're willing and anxious to hear your perspective and stuff that we may want to be looking at in the future as it pertains to this topic. Thank you.
May I proceed?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of committee. It's my pleasure to be here. I had a wonderful evening last night and had an opportunity to speak to some very involved and gracious hosts. And so I'm here today to kind of share with you my experience in carrying.
Representative, one of the things that I need you to do is go ahead and put your name on the record.
Sure. I'm State Representative Karen Yarbrough from Illinois. I serve as the Assistant Majority Leader in the Illinois House.
Thank you.
Does that work? Okay. And so I've been on this a roller coaster for a number of years. I got elected in 2000 and started serving in 2001. And I met some folks in my district, actually, who kind of shared a perspective on the death penalty. And I had not made a decision where I was on the issue. I heard some things that day that changed my life forever, because I'm fully on board with the abolition movement, and obviously so since I had the opportunity to carry the bill. So that was 10 years ago, and almost 10 years ago, then our governor, George Ryan, instituted a moratorium on the death penalty because of all the mistakes in Illinois. We had 20 men on death row who it was found they were not guilty, and I've met many of those men, and I shudder to think of what would have happened if we had executed any one of them. Now, certainly we know that it could have been a situation that we have done that already. We don't know what we've done, but state-sponsored homicide is just not the business that our states need to be in. So I've had a long and winding road with this issue. I know most of the arguments for and against. Illinois has had an active role, and I've spoken to a number of legislators over the years who have carried this bill. It actually landed in my lap a couple of years ago, and I was a little surprised when they brought it to me. One of my colleagues had carried this bill for a number of years, and when they brought it to me to carry, I asked them, you know, why. And you know how that goes. Usually when you have an issue, you take it to its end, whether it gets voted up or down, and usually that's the end of it, or unless you try to bring it back. But my colleague, actually he's a former colleague, Art Turner, carried it for years. And I went to Art and told him that they brought me the bill to carry, and he told me that. He said, sometimes you need another sponsor, and you need a new perspective. And so I carried this bill. Now, it started off as a bill like a phone book, and it ended up being a three-page bill. And that bill just simply said we were abolishing the death penalty in Illinois. We were going to substitute. We have a capital litigation trust fund that was set up to make sure that people could get good counsel who were death penalty eligible. and we would change that to now a death penalty abolition fund, which would go to helping murder victims' families and to for state police training or other training of law enforcement personnel. That's the bill. That's the one we passed in January, and of course the governor signed the bill. I'm not sure if I need to go through all of the reasons why you don't need a death penalty, but if you just allow me to just kind of go through some of those. Number one at the top of the heap is it's just simply not a deterrent. As much as people may say that it's a deterrent, it is simply not. The current capital punishment system costs too much money for executions. Now, in the state of Illinois, I mentioned to you that we've had this, we stopped executing people, and when George Ryan, cleared out death row, we then had the moratorium. So over this period of time that we had the moratorium, of course, nobody was executed, but we spent over $100 million during the course of that time. Now, I don't know what's going on in Oregon, but I can tell you in the state of Illinois, we have a huge budget deficit. Huge. Our corrections budget right now is $1.4 billion, and I've been the appropriations chair of public safety, and so I see those budgets, and I see how much money we're spending in this area, and we need to spend our money differently. The current spending on capital punishment diverts resources from anti-crime efforts that can actually reduce crime. We have a program in Illinois called Ceasefire, and the dollars we spend in Ceasefire actually helps communities stay safe. And it's a small amount of money that we use in that program. We have one community that had 20 murders in 1 year, and we were able to reduce that using the Ceasefire program over the course of a few years down to zero. That's where we want to spend our money. Now, the moral argument, if murder is wrong, it's just wrong. It's wrong if I kill somebody, and it's wrong if the state kills somebody. And many people feel that life in prison without parole is a harsher sentence than death. I agree with that. I visit a number of the prisons in our state. I have one person in my office right now that does nothing but answer prisoners' letters. That's her job. We know that there are a number of things that happen in prisons. We need to become a little more humane. I don't know what happens in Oregon, but I do know what's happening in Illinois. The death penalty is not applied consistently. There's disparities in race and income status. The system is run by humans, so I don't have to tell you that it's prone to error. The death penalty also keeps us in the company of notorious human rights abusers like Iran, China. Most countries of the world have already repealed the death penalty. And with recent high-profile cases, this Angela McAlnulty, the first woman sentenced to death in Oregon since 1961, and the issue I know is on the minds of Oregon voters. There are many other reasons to support repeal and more reasons to simply give the voters of Oregon the chance to have their voices heard. All I'm asking you to consider is to favorably refer this matter to the people as prescribed by your Constitution and give the repeal advocates a chance to make their case to the voters. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Representative. It's very good to see you again, and I appreciate the hard work that you've been doing in the state of Illinois. I'm curious how many folks were on death row when the moratorium went into effect in Illinois.
I'm not sure how many there were, but there were 20 that were not guilty. So I'm not sure the number of how many there were.
Okay, and just follow up. And as far as was there a referral in this? You talked about here referring it to the people. Was there a referral? I'm trying to remember now if you have initiative process in Illinois. It's been almost 20 years since I've lived there. Was there a referral, or was it voted straight up or down in the legislature?
It was voted in the Illinois House. You have to have 60 votes. It got 60 votes, and in the Senate, they needed 30, and so it voted. It was voted out. I think 32. So it was a slim margin. If I could follow up on that, I can tell you that many of my colleagues, as I talk to them about this issue, they had not made decisions, and it wasn't until I came to them directly to talk to them about the different arguments and what they cared about that they really made up their mind. It had never been on the floor to be voted up or down, and I thought it was important to have that vote.
Thank you.
So it's an education process.
Thank you, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chair, and thank you for coming to Oregon. In Oregon, in the last century, the voters abolished and reinstated the death penalty four times, and you're advocating for us to send it back to the ballot. You had the opportunity to do that in Illinois. Why did you choose not to ask the people for their opinion?
That was not our process. Your process is different from ours. It's my understanding that you cannot have a legislative vote. Ours goes through the General Assembly, and the governor signs the bill, and the bill becomes law. So we have two different processes. Now, we certainly could have had a referendum, but that was not something that we were interested in doing. We find that when you ask the question, are you for or against the death penalty, just like that, many people say, well, of course, and they just kind of dismiss it. I was one of those people 11 years ago. Somebody said to me, are you for the death penalty or not? I would just simply said to people that, well, if somebody does something bad, they ought to be punished, and kind of dismissed it. But once I became a legislator, I needed to drill down a little further, and I needed to make some decisions based on information and understanding of the system and whether it works or not. And I just think that not only it's not broken, it just doesn't work. When humans are administering this system, and humans are not perfect, they make mistakes. The George Ryan, former Governor George Ryan, had a commission that examined, this problem, and they came up with 85 reforms. And I don't know if you know the author, Scott Turow. He was on that commission, and he told me himself, even if we employed all 85 reforms, we still could get it wrong.
All right, thank you, Chair Brzezinski. And again, thank you for coming to Oregon and for advocating for your cause. It's my understanding that you said that about 20 people have been on death row and have been exonerated, found innocent while on death row in Illinois, and that's not a very good record, certainly. According to our District Attorney's Association, no one has ever been found innocent of murder after being placed on death row in Oregon, regardless of the effort. So perhaps your advocacy in Illinois is very appropriate, but I question whether the advocacy in Oregon, if you're basing your assumptions on primarily on the innocence of people on death row, that hasn't occurred in Oregon.
I can tell you that when we reduced that bill from the telephone book down to three pages, it had to do more with cost. We cannot afford the system. It would take years and years to process just one death penalty case, and I'm sure that's the case here in Oregon. So cost was a huge factor, and it was probably the single most important factor for many of my colleagues to change their position.
Just to follow up a comment, I think justice certainly has a cost, and the debate really shouldn't be on cost. In my opinion, the debate should be on whether it is just, and that is where the debate on the death penalty should be, as opposed to the cost. That's just my opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative, thank you for being here. I appreciate the work that you're doing and that you came to Oregon. You mentioned in when you were listing the reasons to abolish the death penalty that it's not a deterrent. And I always wonder about the deterrent effect of any of the laws that we're passing in this committee, and wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. And obviously, you must have some data or done some studying on that. So
well, I certainly didn't bring my file on that, but over the years, as I have spoken to any number of people, I mean, if deterrent simply means that, you know, if you have something in place like a punishment, then maybe people would not do some of the things that they would do because they know there was certain punishment. In talking to some prosecutors, they said they needed to have this tool of the death penalty as a big stick in order to get confessions. But what we found, the kind of confessions that they've gotten, and I don't understand this. I'm not sure what I would do if I was accused of a crime that I had not committed, whether I would say that I had done it just to keep the death penalty off the table. But there are people who have confessed to crimes that they have not committed because the death penalty was on the table. Because they were told that if they did not, that this big stick was going to be used. Now, I don't understand that for myself. But again, I've not been accused of a crime. I've not been in front of a prosecutor. They didn't tell me the death penalty was on the table. So I've not had that experience. But I've read and I've talked to a number of prosecutors who've told me they don't understand it either, but it happens. So it's not, especially if you're looking at it from that perspective, if a person would say that they, in fact, they would sign a confession and say they've done something just to keep it off the table, makes me wonder.
And a follow-up?
Yes.
I haven't looked lately. I know there's some other states that have taken action. Where are the states now in terms of the numbers?
The last one that we're the 16th state, so the last one is New Mexico. Do I have this? Do you have the list of the states?
I can probably recite them.
Yeah, you can recite them? Okay.
Do you want to come up and recite those states?
But Illinois is the 16th, and actually our law will go into effect on July 1st.
Thank you.
My name is Ron Steiner. I'm with Oregonians for Alternative to the Death Penalty. The states that do not have a death penalty, there are 16. The oldest one is Michigan, which was repealed in 1847. New Mexico, New Jersey are the most recent. New York does not have the death penalty. Minnesota does not have the death penalty. Hawaii, Alaska do not have the death penalty. Massachusetts does not have a death penalty. Rhode Island, most of the New England states save Connecticut. And Connecticut passed a repeal bill in both houses this past year, or last year, and the governor vetoed it. This year, it was up again, and they had a very gruesome murder in that state. A doctor's family was murdered, two children and his wife, and he went around to many of the legislators who had declared that they would vote for repeal and changed their vote because of the intense pressure in the media at that time. I would be happy to get you a complete list of states that do not have the death penalty, and I can also tell you that in the states of Colorado, Kansas, Maryland, as well as Connecticut, there's some serious activity going on as they move in that direction.
All right, thank you. So I want to limit. This was informational hearing for Representative Yarborough, since she was in the state, as compared to, because at some point, I feel that needs to be more balanced. And since she's here, I want to limit the inquiries to her. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Now, I guess the only question the chair had was regarding the $100 million that were spent over the 10-year moratorium. Could you give us a little bit more? I assume that was just basically continue the process for those who were still sitting on death row.
Yes, yes. We budget about $20 million a year for the capital litigation fund, and that's the amount of money that was spent over the 10-year period. And we would... That fund would go away, and the new fund would come into being, and that would be the abolition fund. And again, that would be used for murder victims' families, for services, and law enforcement training.
All right. So, is it basically dollar for dollar that was going in, or how much is it going to be in this new fund, or how's that going to be?
Well, we already budget the $20 million, so I'm not sure how that will come about, but it'll be, you know, a sizable amount of money, because we want to make sure that especially the murder victims' families get what they need. They go through a lot. They really do. And as a part of our coalition, we had a number of murder victims' families, advocates who worked with us side by side and helped us through this process. That was very important to us because for all kinds of reasons, their voices were heard in the legislators' ears, and they need to have the dollars to help them get through the process. So the coalition, though, was, I can't say enough about the coalition. I think Oregon has an opportunity, though. While we took the legislative process, you have the people of the state of Oregon who can make the decision for you. I can't say which is best. I represent 105,249 people in my district, as does the other 117 people. They send us to the Capitol to make decisions on their behalf. I've been elected 6 times, and I represent my district, I think, well, and the people there, they know who I am. They know that the things I work on. I also had the opportunity to pass Smoke-Free Illinois. That was also a campaign. This was different. But my constituents depend on me to make decisions that are based on fact and good information, and they trust me. And I think the people in the state of Oregon trust you all to make the best decisions for them. In this case, it would be to allow them to vote and make this decision.
Representative Yarbrough, I want to thank you again for making yourself available. I know that you were here on for another visit in Portland, and your schedule permitted you to come down to give us your insights and from the committee's perspective.
I really appreciate this opportunity. It meant a lot to me. I didn't know I was going to have this opportunity, but I really appreciate having it. Thank you so much. And when you get to Illinois, please, look me up.
Oh, so that's a question. How often are you, as the Illinois legislature, in on a...
We're not in session now. We ended our session on May 31st. We'll go back to session whenever the governor calls us. I'm hearing that he may call us back in for a special session, but we'll be back in for veto session in October for 2 weeks to take up the governor's vetoes and the mandatory vetoes, and it's back to session again in January.
So you mean annually starting in January?
Yes.
Okay. And then what's the length of your session prescribed to you?
Well, we start in January. We usually end up in May, hopefully, if we don't go in a special session. You know what that's like. But we usually meet about 3 days a week until May, and we're there just about every day in May so that we finish up our work.
Interesting. We've just shifted. The voters have placed... limitations on our sessions. We used to meet every other year, odd number of years, and now we have our long session as we are now. We have a limitation of 160 days, and so for that session to be completed, where we used to go as long as it took, and then we'll come back in the even number of years and have a short session, a 35-day session, similar modeled after the state of Washington.
Oh, I see.
So it's nice to see how other states
yes.
have their legislatures meet. Again, thank you very much for being here.
And thank you.
All right.
Thank you, members of the committee.
That's going to take care of the informational meeting. For those who attended, thank you very much, and we're adjourned.